His taloned feet gripped the ridge of the rock, and his shadow wings beat gently at the air, his gaze black and unreadable. I'd been hoping he would show himself again, but now I wasn't sure what to do. Had he been watching us? What had he seen? How much had he understood? Carefully, I reached into my pocket, afraid any sudden movement might make him bolt. I held out my hand, the lance of emerald resting on my palm. He frowned, a line appearing between his brows, then folded his wings and leapt soundlessly from the rock. It was hard not to back away. I didn't want to be afraid, but the way he moved was so inhuman. He stalked toward me slowly, eyes focused on the ring. When he was less than a foot away, he cocked his head to one side. Despite the black eyes and the inky lines that coursed up his neck, he still had an elegant face, his mother's fine cheekbones, the strong jaw that must have come from his ambassador father. His frown deepened. Then he reached out and plucked the emerald up in his claws. "It's..." The words died on my lips. Nikolai turned my palm over and slid the ring onto my finger. My breath caught between a laugh and a sob. He knew me. I couldn't stop the tears that welled in my eyes. He pointed to my hand and made a sweeping gesture. It took me a second to grasp his meaning. He was imitating the way I moved when I summoned. "You want me to call the light?" His face stayed blank. I let sunlight pool in my palm. "This?" The glow seemed to galvanize him. He seized my hand and slapped it against his chest. I tried to draw away, but he held my hand in place. His grip was vice-like, made stronger by whatever monstrous thing the Darkling had placed inside him. I shook my head. "No!" Again, he slapped my hand against his chest, the movement almost frantic. "I don't know what my power will do to you," I protested. The corner of his mouth curled, the faintest suggestion of Nikolai's wry smile. I could almost hear him say, "Really lovely. What could be worse?" Beneath my hand, his heart beat, steady and human. I released a long breath. "All right," I said, "I'll try." I summoned the barest bit of light, letting it flow through my palm. He winced, but held my hand firmly in place. I pushed a little harder, trying to direct the light into him, thinking of the spaces between, letting it seep through his skin. The black cracks on his torso began to recede. I couldn't quite believe what I was seeing. Could it possibly be this simple? "It's working," I gasped. He grimaced but waved me on, asking for more. I called the light into him, watching the black veins fade and recoil. He was panting now, his eyes closed. A low, pained whine rose from his throat. His grip around my wrist was iron. "Nikolai?" Then I felt something push back, as if the darkness within him was fighting. It shoved against the light. All at once, the cracks exploded outward, just as dark as before, like the roots of a tree drinking deep of poisoned water. Nikolai flinched and shoved away from me with a frustrated snarl. He looked down at his chest, misery carved into his features. It was no good. Only the cut worked on the Nichevoya. It might well destroy the thing inside Nikolai, but it would kill him, too. His shoulders slumped, his wings roiling with the same shifting movement as the fold. "We'll think of something. David will come up with a solution, or we'll find a healer." He dropped to his haunches, elbows resting on his knees, face buried in his hands. Nikolai had seemed infinitely capable, confident in his belief that every problem had a solution and he would be the one to find it. I couldn't bear seeing him this way, broken and defeated for the first time. I approached him cautiously and crouched down. He wouldn't meet my eyes. Tentatively, I reached out and touched his arm, ready to draw back if he startled or snapped. His skin was warm, the feel of it unchanged despite the shadows lurking beneath it. I slipped my arms around him, careful of the wings that rustled at his back. "I'm sorry," I whispered. He dropped his forehead to my shoulder. "I'm so sorry, Nikolai." He released a small, shuddering sigh. Then he inhaled and tensed. He turned his head. I felt his breath on my neck, the scrape of one of his teeth beneath my jaw. "Nikolai?" His arms clamped around me. His claws dug into my back. There was no mistaking the growl that issued from his chest. I pushed away from him and shot to my feet. "Stop," I said harshly. His hands flexed. His lips had pulled back to reveal his onyx fangs. I knew what I saw in him. Appetite. "Don't," I pleaded. "This isn't you. You can control this." He took a step toward me. Another rumbling animal growl rolled through him. I lifted my hands. "Nikolai," I said warningly. "I will put you down." I saw the moment that reason returned. His face crumpled in horror at what he'd wanted to do, at what some part of him probably still wanted to do. His body was trembling with the desire to feed. His black eyes brimmed with flickering shadows. Were they tears? He clenched his fists, threw back his head. The tendons in his neck knotted, and he released an echoing shriek of helplessness and rage. I'd heard it before, when the Darkling summoned the Nichevoya. The rending of the fabric of the world, the cry of something that should not be. He launched himself into the air and hurtled straight for the fold. "Nikolai!" I screamed. But he was already gone, swallowed by the seething blackness, lost to the Volcra's domain. I heard footsteps and turned to see Mal, Harsha, and Zoya running toward me, Onkot yowling and darting between their legs. Harsha had his flint out, and Mal was unslinging his rifle. Zoya's eyes were wide. "Was that Nichevoya?" I shook my head. "It was Nikolai." They stopped dead.
"He found us?" said Mal.
"He's been tracking us since we left the spinning wheel."
"But the Darkling."
"If he were the Darkling's creature, we'd already be dead."
"How long have you known he was following us?" asked Zoya angrily.
"I saw him once, back at the copper mine." "There was nothing to do about it."
"We could have had Mal put an arrow through him," said Harsha.
I jabbed a finger at him.
"I wouldn't abandon you, and I'm not abandoning Nikolai."
"Easy," said Mal, stepping forward. "He's gone now, and there's no point in fighting about it. Harsha, go start a fire. Zoya, the grouse we caught need cleaning."
She stared at him and didn't budge. He rolled his eyes.
"All right. They need cleaning by someone else. Please go find somebody to order around."
"My pleasure."
Harsha returned his flint to his sleeve.
"They're all crazy, Onkot," he said to the tabby. "Invisible armies. Monster princes. Let's go set fire to something."
I rubbed a hand over my eyes as they walked off. "Are you going to yell at me, too?"
"No. I've wanted to shoot Nikolai plenty of times, but that seems a little petty now. Curious about that ring, though."
I'd forgotten about the massive jewel on my hand. I pulled it off and shoved it in my pocket.
"Nikolai gave it to me back at the spinning wheel. I thought he might recognize it."
"Did he?"
"I think so. Before he tried to eat me."
"Saints."
He flew into the fold.
"Do you think he meant to
kill himself? I don't know. Maybe it's like a vacation home to him now. I don't even know if the Volcra would see him as prey."
I leaned against the boulder Nikolai had been perched on just minutes before. "He tried to have me heal him. It didn't work."
"You don't know what you might be able to do once the amplifiers are brought together."
"You mean after I murder you?"
"Helena,
we are not talking about this."
"You can't just pull the covers over your head and pretend this isn't happening."
"Can and will.
You're being a brat. And you're being noble and self-sacrificing, and it makes me want to throttle you.
Well, that's a start.
That's not funny.
How am I supposed to deal with this?
He asked.
I don't feel noble or self-sacrificing. I'm just...
What? He threw up his hands.
Hungry.
You're hungry?
Yes, he snapped. I'm hungry and I'm tired and I'm pretty sure that Tolly is going to eat all the grouse.
I couldn't help it. I burst out laughing. Zoya warned me about this. She gets cranky when she's hungry, too.
I'm not cranky.
Sulky, I amended graciously.
I am not sulking.
You're right, I said, trying to restrain my giggles. Definitely more of a pout than a sulk. He snagged my hand and pulled me in for a kiss. He nipped my ear once, hard.
Ow! I told you I was hungry.
You are the second person to try to bite me today.
Oh, it gets worse. When we get back to camp, I'm requesting the third tail of Craigie.
I'm telling Harshaw you're a dog person.
I'm telling Zoya you don't like her hair.
We kept it up all the way back to the bittern, shoving and taunting each other, feeling a little bit of the strain of the last week's ease. But as the sun set and I looked over my shoulder into the fold, I wondered what human things might remain beyond its shores, and if they could hear our laughter. The Soldat's soul arrived late that night and got only a few hours of sleep before we set out the next day. They were wary as we entered the fold, but I'd expected them to be far worse, clutching icons and chanting prayers. When we took our first steps into the darkness, and I let the light burst forth in a flood around us, I understood. They didn't need to plead with their saints. They had me. The bittern drifted high above us, well within the roof of the bright bubble I'd created, but I'd chosen to travel on the sands, so that I could practice bending the light within the confines of the fold. To the Soldat's soul, this new display of power was one more miracle, further proof that I was a living saint. I remembered the Apparat's claim. There is no greater power than faith, and there will be no greater army than one driven by it. I prayed that he was right, that I wasn't just another leader taking their loyalty and repaying them with useless, honorable deaths. It took us the better part of that day and night to cross the fold and escort all of the Soldat's soul up the western shore. By the time we arrived back at Tomikiana, David and Jenya had completely taken over. The kitchen looked like a storm had blown through. Bubbling pots covered the cook stove, and a huge kettle had been brought in from the cider press to serve as a cooling tub. David perched on a stool at the big wooden table where the servants had probably rolled dough only weeks before. Now it was littered with glass and metal, smears of some tar-like substance, and countless little bottles of foul-smelling yellow sludge.
"Is this entirely safe?" I asked him.
"Nothing is entirely safe."
"How reassuring," he smiled.
"I'm glad."
In the dining room, Jenya had set up her own workspace, where she was helping to construct canisters for the Lumia and slings that would carry them. The others could activate them as late as they dared during the attack, and if something happened to me on the fold, they might still have enough light to get out. All of the farm owner's glassware had been conscripted, goblets, snifters, wine and liquor glasses, an elaborate collection of vases, and a chafing dish in the shape of a fish. The tea set had been filled with screws and grommets, and Misha sat cross-legged on a silk-cushioned chair, gleefully deconstructing saddles and organizing the strips and bits of leather into careful piles. Harshaw was dispatched to steal whatever food he could find from nearby estates, work he seemed disturbingly adept at. I labored beside Jenya and Misha for most of the day. Out in the gardens, the squallers practiced creating an acoustic blanket. It was a variation on the trick Zoya had performed after the cave-in, and we hoped it would allow us to enter the fold and take up our positions in darkness without attracting the attention of the Volcra. It would be a temporary measure at best,
but we just needed it to last long enough to enable the ambush. Periodically, my ears would crackle, and all sound would seem to dampen. Then I'd hear Nadia as clearly as if she were standing in the room with me, or Adric's voice booming in my ear. The pop of gunfire floated back to us from the orchard where Mal and the twins were choosing the best marksman from the soldat's soul. We had to be cautious with our ammunition, so they used their bullets sparingly. Later, I heard them in the parlor, sorting through weapons and supplies. We pieced together a dinner of apples, hard cheese, and stale black bread that Harshaw had found in some abandoned larder. The dining room and kitchen were a wreck, so we built a big fire in the grate of the grand receiving room and set out a makeshift picnic sprawled on the floor and watered silk couches, toasting bits of bread skewered on the gnarled branches of apple trees. "If I survive this," I said, wiggling my toes near the fire, "I'm going to have to find some way to compensate these poor people for their damages." Zoya snorted. "They'll be forced to redecorate. We're doing them a favor."
"And if we don't survive," observed David, "this whole place will be enveloped in darkness."
Tolia pushed aside a flowered cushion.
"Might be for the best."
Harshaw took a swig of cider from the jug Tamar had brought in from the press.
"If I live, the first thing I'm doing is coming back here and swimming around in a tank of this stuff."
"Go easy, Harshaw," said Tamar.
"We need you awake tomorrow."
He groaned.
"Why do battles always have to be so early?"
Grudgingly, he gave up the jug to one of the soldat's soul. We'd gone over the plan until all of us were sure we knew exactly where to be and when. We'd enter the fold at dawn. The squallers would go in first to lay down the acoustic blanket and hide our movements from the Volgra. I'd heard Nadia whispering with Tamar about not wanting Adric with them, but Tamar had argued hard in favor of including him.
"He's a warrior," she'd said. "If you make him believe he's less now, he'll never know he can be more."
I would be with the squallers in case anything went wrong. The marksman and the other Grisha would follow. We'd planned the ambush at the center of the fold, almost directly between Krybirsk and Novokrybirsk. Once we spotted the Darkling's skiff, I would illuminate the unsee, bending the light to keep us invisible. If that didn't bring him to a halt, our marksmen would. They would thin his ranks, and then it was up to Harshaw and the squallers to create enough chaos that the twins and I could board the skiff, locate the students, and get them to safety. Once they were clear, I would deal with the Darkling. Hopefully, he would never see me coming. Jenya and David would remain at Tomikiana with Misha. I knew Misha would insist on going with us, so Jenya had slipped a sleeping draft into his dinner. He was already yawning, curled up near the grate, and I hoped he would sleep through our departure in the morning. The night wore on. We knew we needed to sleep, but no one much felt like it. Some people decided to bed down by the fire in the receiving room, while others trickled out into the house in pairs. Nobody wanted to be alone tonight. Jenya and David had work to do in the kitchens. Tamar and Nadia had disappeared early. I thought Zoya might take her pick of the soldat's soul, but as I slipped out the door, she was still watching the fire, Onkat purring in her lap. I made my way down the dark hall to the parlor, where Mal was making a final check of the weapons and gear. It was a strange sight, to see the piles of guns and ammunition stacked on a marble tabletop next to the framed miniatures of the lady of the house and a pretty collection of snuff boxes.
"We've been here before," he said.
"We have?"
"When we came out of the fold the first time. We stopped in the orchard, not very far from the house. I recognized it earlier when we were out shooting."
I remembered. It seemed like a lifetime ago. The fruit on the trees had been too small and sour to eat. How did the soldat's soul do today?
"Not bad. Only a few of them have much range, but if we're lucky, that's all we need." A lot of them saw action in the First Army, so at least there's a chance they'll keep their heads.
Laughter drifted back to us from the receiving room. Someone, Harshaw, I suspect, had started singing. But in the parlor it was quiet, and I could hear that it had begun to rain.
Mal, I said, do you think it's the amplifiers?
He frowned, checking the sight on a rifle.
What do you mean?
Is that what's between us? My power and yours? Is that why we became friends? Why? I trailed off. He picked up another gun, sighted down the barrel.
Maybe that brought us together, but it didn't make us who we are. It didn't make you the girl who could get me to laugh when I had nothing. It sure as hell didn't make me the idiot who took that for granted. Whatever there is between us, we forged it. It belongs to us.
Then he set down the rifle and wiped his hands on a rag.
Come with me, he said,
taking my hand and pulling me behind him. We moved through the darkened house. I heard voices singing something bawdy down the hall. Footsteps overhead as someone ran from one room to the next. I thought Mal might lead me up the stairs to the bedrooms. I guess I hoped he would, but instead he took me through the east wing of the house, past a silent sewing room, a library, all the way to a windowless vestibule lined with trowels, spades, and dried cuttings.
Delightful? Wait here.
He opened a door I hadn't seen, tucked into the wall. In the dim light, I saw it led to some kind of long, narrow conservatory. The rain beat a steady rhythm against the vaulted roof and glazed glass walls. Mal moved deeper into the room, lighting lanterns that rested on the edge of a slender, reflecting pool. Apple trees lined the walls, their boughs dense with clusters of white flowers. Their petals lay like a smattering of snow on the red tile floor and floated on the surface of the water. I trailed Mal down the length of the pool. The air inside was balmy, sweet with apple blossoms, and loamy with the rich scent of soil. Outside, the wind rose and howled with the storm. But in here, it was as if the seasons had been suspended. I had the strangest sense that we could be anywhere, that the rest of the house had simply fallen away, and we were completely alone. At the far end of the room, a desk was tucked into the corner. A shawl had been thrown over the back of a scrollwork chair. There was a basket of sewing things resting on a rug patterned with apple blossoms. The lady of the house must have come here to do her needlework, to sip her morning tea. In the daytime, she would have had a perfect view of the orchards through the big arched windows. A book was open on the desk. I peered at the pages.
It's a diary, Mal said. Statistics on the spring crop. The progress of hybrid trees.
Her glasses, I said, picking up the gold wire frames. I wonder if she's missing them. Mal leaned against the stone rim of the pool.
Do you ever wonder what it might have been like if the Grisha examiners had discovered your power back at Kerimsen?
Sometimes.
Ravka would be different.
Maybe not. My power was useless before we found the stag. Without you, we might never have located any of Muratsova's amplifiers.
You'd be different, he said.
I put the delicate frames aside and flipped through the columns of numbers and tidy handwriting. What kind of person might I have been? Would I have become friends with Jenya, or simply seen her as a servant?
Would I have had Zoya's confidence, her easy arrogance?
What would the Darkling have been to me? I can tell you what would have happened, I said.
Go on.
I closed the diary and turned back to Mal, perching on the edge of the desk. I would have gone to the little palace and been spoiled and pampered. I would have dined off of golden plates, and I never would have struggled to use my power. It would have been like breathing, the way it always should have been. And in time, I would have forgotten Kerimsen.
and me.
Never you. He raised a brow. Possibly you, I admitted. He laughed. The Darkling would have sought Moritzova's amplifiers, fruitlessly, hopelessly, until one day a tracker, a no-one, an Otkazatsia orphan, traveled into the ice of Tsubea.
You're assuming I didn't die on the fold.
In my version, you were never sent into the fold. When you tell the story, you can die tragically.
In that case, carry on.
This nobody, this nothing, this pathetic orphan, I get it. He would be the first to spot the stag after centuries of searching. So, of course, the Darkling and I would have to travel to Tsubea in his great black coach.
In the snow?
His great black sleigh, I amended. And when we arrived at Chernost, your unit would be led into our exalted presence.
Are we allowed to walk, or do we wriggle in on our bellies like the lowly worms we are?
You walk, but you do it with a lot of deference. I would be seated on a raised dais, and I would wear jewels in my hair and a golden kefta.
Not black?
I paused. Maybe black.
It wouldn't matter, Mal said. I still wouldn't be able to stop looking at you.
I laughed. No, you would be making eyes at Zoya.
Zoya's there.
Isn't she always?
He smiled. I would have noticed you.
Of course you would. I'm the Sun Summoner, after all.
You know what I mean.
I looked down, brushing petals off the desk. Did you ever notice me at Karimson? He was silent for a long moment, and when I glanced at him, he was looking up at the glass ceiling. He'd gone red as a beet. Mal? He cleared his throat, crossed his arms.
As a matter of fact, I did. I have some very distracting thoughts about you.
You did? I sputtered.
And I felt guilty for every one of them. You were supposed to be my best friend, not...
He shrugged and turned even redder. Idiot.
That fact is well established and adds nothing to the plot.
Well, I said, taking another swipe at the petals, it wouldn't matter if you noticed me because I would have noticed you.
A lowly Otkazatsia.
That's right. I said quietly. I didn't feel like teasing him anymore.
And what would you have seen?
A soldier. Cocky. Scarred. Extraordinary. And that would have been our beginning. He rose and closed the distance between us.
And this still would have been our end.
He was right. Even in dreams, we had no future. If we somehow both survive tomorrow, I would have to seek an alliance and a crown. Mal would have to find a way to keep his heritage a secret. Gently, he took my face in his hands.
I would have been different, too, without you. Weaker. Reckless.
He smiled slightly.
Afraid of the dark.
He brushed the tears from my cheeks. I wasn't sure when they'd started.
But no matter who or what I was, I would have been yours.
I kissed him then, with grief and need and years of longing, with a desperate hope that I could keep him here in my arms, with the damning knowledge that I could not. I leaned into him, the press of his chest, the breadth of his shoulders.
"Going to miss this," he said as he kissed my cheeks,
my jaw, my eyelids.
"The way you taste."
He set his lips to the hollow beneath my ear.
"The way you smell."
His hands slid up my back.
"The way you feel."
My breath hitched as his hips settled against mine. Then he drew back, searching my eyes.
"I wanted more for you," he said. "A white veil in your hair. Vows we could keep."
A proper wedding night? Just tell me this isn't goodbye. That's the only vow I need.
I love you, Alina.
He kissed me again. He hadn't answered, but I didn't care because his mouth was on mine, and in this moment I could pretend I wasn't a savior or a saint, that I could simply choose him, have a life, be in love, that we wouldn't have one night, we would have thousands. I pulled him down with me, easing his body over mine, feeling the cold floor at my back. He had a soldier's hands, rough and calloused, heating my skin, sending hungry sparks through my body that made me lift my hips and try to bring him closer. I pulled his shirt over his head, letting my fingers trail over the smooth ridges of his muscled back, feeling the lightly raised lines of the words that marked him. But when he slid the fabric of my blouse from my arms, I stiffened, feeling suddenly painfully aware of every wrong thing about me, jutting bones, two small breasts, skin pale and dry as an onion. Then he cupped my cheek, his thumb tracing my lip.
"You are all I've ever wanted," he said. "You are the whole of my heart."
I saw myself then, sour, silly, difficult, lovely in his eyes. I drew him to me, felt him shudder as our bodies came together, skin against skin, felt the heat of his lips, his tongue, hands moving until the knee between us drew taut and anxious as a bowstring waiting for release. He clasped his hand to my wrist, and my mind filled with light. All I saw was Mal's face. All I felt was his body, above me, around me. An awkward rhythm at first, then slow and steady as the beat of the rain. It was all we needed. It was all we would ever have.
Chapter 17. The next morning, I woke to find that Mal had already risen. He'd left me a pot of hot tea on a tray surrounded by apple blossoms. The rain had stopped, but the walls of the conservatory were covered in mist. I rubbed my sleeve against a pane of glass and looked out into the deep blue of early dawn. A deer was moving between the trees, head bent to the sweet grass. I dressed slowly, drank my tea, lingered by the reflecting pool where the lanterns had long since gone out. In a few hours' time, this place might be buried in darkness. I wanted to remember every detail. On a whim, I picked up a pen and flipped to the last page of the diary and wrote our names. Alina Starkov, Melyen Oretsev. I wasn't sure why I did it. I just needed to say we had been there. I found the others packing up in the main hall. Jenya waylaid me by the door with my coat in her hands. The olive wool was freshly pressed.
"You should look your best when you put the darkling in the ground."
"Thanks," I said with a smile. "I'll try not to bleed all over it." She kissed both of my cheeks.
"Good luck. We'll be waiting when you get back."
I took her hand and placed Nikolai's ring in her palm. "If something goes wrong, if we don't make it, take David and Misha and get to Oskarvo. This should buy you all the help you need." She swallowed, then hugged me hard. Outside, the soldat sol waited in rigid formation, rifles on their backs, canisters of inactive lumia slung over their shoulders. The tattoos on their faces looked fierce in the dawn light. The Grisha wore roughspun. They might have been ordinary soldiers. Harsha had left Ankat curled up with Misha, but now she sat in the parlor window, lazily grooming herself and watching us assemble. Tolya and Tamar had their golden sunbursts pinned to their chests. Mal was still with Misha. He smiled when he saw me and tapped the space where the pin would have gone, right over his heart. The deer had scattered. The orchard was empty as we moved through it, boots leaving damp marks on the soft earth. A half hour later, we were standing at the shores of the fold. I joined the other Ethereali, Zoya, Nadia, Adric, and Harsha. It felt somehow right that we should be the first to enter and that we would do it together.
The squallers raised their arms, summoning current and dropping the pressure as Zoya had done back in the caves. My ears crackled as they layered the acoustic blanket. If it didn't hold, Harsha and I were ready to summon light and fire to drive the Volcra back. We spread out in a line, and with measured steps, we entered the darkness of the fold. The unsee always felt like the end of everything. It wasn't only the dark, it was the terrible sense of isolation, as if the world had disappeared, leaving only you, the rattle of your breath, the stuttering beat of your heart. As we stepped into the dead gray sands, and the darkness thickened around us, it took everything in me not to raise my hands and wrap all of us in safe, protective light. I listened closely, expecting to hear the beating of wings, one of those horrible, inhuman shrieks. But I heard nothing, not even our footsteps on the sand. Whatever the squallers were doing was working. The silence was deep and impenetrable. "Hello?" I whispered. "We hear you." I whirled. I knew Zoya was farther down the line, but it sounded like she was speaking right in my ear. We moved at a steady pace. I heard a click, then almost 10 minutes later, a double click. We'd gone a mile. At one point I heard the distant flap of wings above us, and I felt fear move through our ranks like a living thing. The Volcra might not hear us, but they could scent prey from miles away. Were they circling above us even now, sensing that something was wrong, that someone was near? I doubted Zoya's trick would keep us safe for long. The absolute madness of what we were doing struck me in that moment. We had dared what no one else had. We had entered the fold without light. We kept moving. 2 clicks later, we stopped and took up our positions to wait. As soon as we sighted the Darkling skiff, we'd have to move quickly. My thoughts turned to him. Cautiously, I tested the tether that bound us. Hunger quaked through me with palpable force. He was eager, ready to unleash the power of the fold, ready for a fight. I felt it too. I let it echo back to him, that rush of anticipation, that need. "I am coming for you." Mal and Tolia, maybe all of the others, believed that the amplifiers had to be brought together, but they had never felt the thrill of using Merzost. It was something no other Grisha understood, and in the end, it was what bound the Darkling and me most closely. Not our powers, not the strangeness of them. Not that we were both aberrations, if not abominations. It was our knowledge of the forbidden, our desire for more. The minutes ticked by, and my nerves began to jangle. The squallers could maintain the acoustic blanket for only so long. What if the Darkling waited until night to attack? "Where are you?" The answer came in a pale violet glow, moving toward us from the east. 2 clicks. We fanned out in the formation we had practiced. 3 clicks. That was my signal. I raised my hands and set the fold ablaze. In that same moment, I bent the light, letting it flow around each of our soldiers like a stream. What did the Darklings see? Dead sands, the flat sheen of a gray sky, the ruined hulks of skiffs falling to dust. And that was all. We were invisible. We were air. The skiff slowed. As it drew near, I saw its black sails marked with the sun in eclipse. The strange smoked glass quality of its hull. The violet flame of the Lumia shimmered over its sides, vague and flickering in the bright glare of my power. Squallers stood at the masts in their blue kefta. A few Inferni lined the railings, flanked by heartrenders in red, heavily armed opriechniki in gray. It was a spare force. The students must be below decks. The Darkling stood at the prow, surrounded by his shadow horde. As always, the first sight of him was practically a physical blow. It was like going to him in a vision. He was simply more real, more vibrant than everything else around him.
It happened so fast I barely had time to register it. The first shot struck one of the Darklings Oprichniki. He toppled over the skiff's railing. Then the shots came in a rapid patter, like raindrops on a rooftop at the start of a storm. Grisha and Oprichniki slumped and fell against one another as confusion broke out aboard the glass skiff. I saw more bodies fall. Someone shouted, "Return fire!" and the air erupted with the jarring thunder of gunshots, but we were safely out of range. The Nichevoya beat their wings, turning in wide arcs, searching for targets. Flints were struck, and the Inferni who remained on the skiff sent gouts of flame flaring through the air. Cloaked from sight, Harshaw turned the fire back on them. I heard screams. Then silence, broken only by moaning and shouted orders from the glass skiff. Our sharpshooters had done their job well. The area around the railing was littered with bodies. The Darkling, unharmed, was pointing to a heartrender and issuing some kind of command. I couldn't make out his words, but I knew this was when he would use the students. I looked around me, tracking the shooters, the Grisha, feeling their presence in the light. A single click. The squallers sent a wave of sand crashing through the air. More shouts rose from the deck as the Darkling squallers tried to respond. That was our cue. The twins and I bolted for the skiff, approaching from the stern. We didn't have much time.
"Where are they?"
Tolya whispered as we boarded. It was strange to hear his voice, but not to see him. "Maybe below," I replied. The skiff was shallow, but there was enough room. We picked our way across the deck, searching for a hatch, careful not to brush against the Darkling's Grisha and guards. The remaining Oprichniki had their guns trained on the empty sands beyond the skiff. We were close enough that I could see the sweat on their brows, their wide eyes. They twitched, jumping at every real or imagined sound.
"Maleni,"
they whispered. "Ghosts." Only the Darkling seemed unfazed. His face was serene as he surveyed the destruction I'd loosed. I was close enough to strike. But he was still protected by his shadow soldiers. I had the uneasy sensation that he was waiting for something. Suddenly an Oprichnik yelled, "Get down!" The people around us dove to the deck, and the air exploded with gunfire. Two other glass skiffs plowed into view, loaded with Oprichniki. As soon as they came into contact with the light, the skiffs ignited with the glowing violet flame of Lumia.
"Did you think I would come to meet you unprepared, Alina?"
the Darkling called over the chaos.
"Did you think I would not sacrifice an entire fleet of skiffs to this cause?"
However many he had sent, only two had made it through. But that would be enough to turn the tide. I heard screams, shouting, our soldiers returning fire. A red stain appeared in the sand, and with a lurch I realized that one of our people was bleeding. It could be Vladim, Zoya, Mal. I had to get them out of here. Where were the students? I tried to keep my focus. I couldn't let the light falter. Our forces had canisters of Lumia. They could retreat into the fold, but I knew they wouldn't, not until I was clear of the Darkling skiff. I crept around the masts, searching for some sign of a trapdoor or hatch. Then a searing pain cut through my shoulder. I fell backward, crying out. I'd been shot. I sprawled on the deck, feeling my hold on the light falter. Tolya's shape flickered into view beside me. I tried to regain control. He disappeared, but through the railing I could see soldiers and Grisha appearing on the sands. Oprichniki leapt from the other skiffs, moving in for the attack, and the Nichevoya surged into the battle. Panic clamored through me as I scrambled for focus. I couldn't feel my right arm. I made myself breathe. Stop huffing like a wild boar. If Adric could summon with one arm, then I could too. Tamar appeared near the prow, vanished, stuttered back into view. A Nichevoya slammed into her. She screamed as it sunk its claws deep into her back. No! I gathered my fractured concentration and reached for the cut, though I only had one good arm to wield it. I wasn't sure that I could hit the Shadow Soldier without wounding Tamar, but I couldn't just watch her die. Then another shape dove into the fray from above. It took me a long second to understand what I was seeing. Nikolai. Fangs bared, wings spread. With his talons, he seized the Nichevoya that held Tamar and wrenched its head back, forcing it to release her. It skittered and writhed, but Nikolai flew upward and hurled it into the blackness beyond. I heard frenzied shrieks from somewhere in the distance. Volkra. The Shadow Soldier did not reappear. Nikolai swooped back down, barreling into another of the Darkling's Nichevoya. I could almost imagine his laugh.
"Well, if I'm going to be a monster, I might as well be king of the monsters."
Then I gasped as my good arm was slammed down to the deck. The Darkling loomed over me, his boot pressing down painfully on my wrist.
"There you are," he said in his cool, cut-glass voice. "Hello, Alina."
The light collapsed. Darkness crowded in, lit only by the eerie flicker of violet flame. I grunted as the Darkling's boot ground down on the bones of my arm. "Where are the students?" I gritted out.
"They aren't here."
"What did you do to them?"
"They're safe and sound, back in Kribirsk, probably having their lunch."
His Nichevoya circled around us, forming a perfect protective dome that shifted and writhed, wings, talons, hands.
"I knew the threat would be enough." "Did you really believe I would endanger Grisha children when we've lost so many?"
I thought he was capable of anything. He wanted me to believe, I realized. When he'd shown me Botkin's and Anakuya's corpses, he'd wanted me to believe in his ruthlessness. Then I remembered his words from so long ago. "Make me your villain."
"I know what you thought. What you've always thought of me. It's so much easier that way, isn't it? To puff yourself up with your own righteousness."
"I didn't invent your crimes." This wasn't over yet. All I needed was to reach the flint in my sleeve. All I needed was a spark. It might not kill either of us, but it would hurt like hell, and it might buy the others time.
"Where is the boy? I have my summoner. I want my tracker, too."
Mal was still just a tracker to him, thank saints. My good hand curled into my sleeve, brushed the edge of the flint. "I won't let him be used," I said. "Not as leverage. Not as anything."
"On your back. The faithful dying around you. And yet, you remain defiant."
He yanked me to my feet. Two Nichevoya slid into place to restrain me as the flint slipped out of my grasp. The Darkling shoved the fabric of my coat aside, his hands sliding down my body. My heart sank as his fingers closed over the first pack of blasting powder. He pulled it from my pocket, then quickly located the second. He sighed.
"I can feel your intent, as you feel mine, Alina. Your hopeless resolve, your martyr's determination. I recognize it now."
The tether. An idea came to me then. It was the smallest chance, but I would take it. The Darkling tossed the packs of blasting powder to a Nichevoya, who arched away with them into the darkness. He watched me with cool, gray eyes as we waited, the sounds of the battle muffled by the whirring of the Shadow Soldiers around us. A moment later, a shattering boom sounded from somewhere in the distance. The Darkling shook his head.
"It may well take me another lifetime to break you, Alina. But I will put my mind to the task."
He turned, and I acted. restrained by the Nichevoya. I couldn't use the cut, but I wasn't powerless. I twisted my wrists. The violet light of the Lumia bent around me. At the same time, I reached across the tether between us. The Darkling's head jerked up, and for a moment, though I still stood invisible in the grip of the Nichevoya, I was staring at him from beside the mast. The vision of the girl before him was whole and unwounded. She raised her arms to deliver the cut. The Darkling didn't stop to think. He reacted. It was the barest second, the brief space between instinct and understanding, but it was enough. His shadow soldiers released me and sprang forward to protect him. I lunged toward the railing and threw myself over the side of the skiff. I landed on my wounded arm and pain slammed through my body. The Darkling's howl of rage sounded behind me. I knew I'd lost control of the light, and that meant I was visible. I made myself keep moving, dragging myself across the sand, away from the violet glow of the Lumia. I saw Sun soldiers and Grisha fighting by the illuminated skiffs, Harshaw down, Ruby bleeding. I forced myself to my feet. My head spun. I clutched my wounded arm and lurched into the darkness. I had no sight, no sense of direction. I plunged farther into the black, trying to make my mind work to form some kind of plan. I knew the Volcra could come for me at any moment, but I couldn't risk the light. Think, I berated myself. I was out of ideas. The blasting powders were gone. I couldn't raise the cut. My sleeve was wet with blood, and my footsteps slowed. I had to find someone to heal my arm. I had to regroup. I couldn't just run from the Darkling again the way I'd done that first time on the fold. I'd been running ever since. Alina! I spun. Mal's voice in the dark. Let it be a trick of sound, I thought. But I knew the squalor's blanket had long since been lifted. How had he found me? Stupid question. Mal would always find me. I gasped as he grabbed my wounded arm. Despite the pain and the risk, I summoned a weak wash of light, saw his beautiful face streaked with dirt and blood, and the knife in his hand. I recognized the blade. It was Tamar's, Grisha made. Had she offered it to him for this moment? Had he sought her out to ask for it? Mal, don't. This isn't over yet. It is, Alina. I tried to pull away, but he wrapped his hand hard around my wrist, fingers pinching together, the sharp jolt of power moving through both of us, calling me, demanding that I step through that door. With his other hand, he forced my fingers around the knife's grip. The light wavered. No! Don't let it all be for nothing, Alina! Please! An agonized scream rose over the clamor of the battle. It sounded like Zoya. Save them, Alina. Don't let me live knowing I might have stopped this. Mal, save them. This once let me carry you. His gaze locked on mine. End this, he said. His grip tightened. There is no end to our story. I would never know if it was greed or selflessness that moved my hand. With Mal's fingers guiding me, I shoved the knife up and into his chest. The momentum jerked me forward and I stumbled. I pulled back, the knife falling from both of our hands, blood spilling from the wound, but he kept his hold on my wrist. Mal! I sobbed. He coughed and blood burbled from his lips. He swayed forward. I nearly toppled as I clutched him to me, his hold on my wrist so tight I thought the bones might snap. He gasped, a wet rattle. His full weight slumped against me, dragging me down, fingers still clenched, pressed against my skin as if he were taking my pulse. I knew when he was gone. For a moment, all was silent. I held breath. And then everything exploded into white fire, A roar filled my ears, an avalanche of sound that shook the sands and made the very air vibrate. I screamed as power flooded through me, as I burned, consumed from the inside. I was a living star. I was combustion. I was a new sun born to shatter air and eat the earth. I am ruination. The world trembled, dissolved, crashed in on itself. And then the power was gone. My eyes flew open. Thick darkness surrounded me. My ears were ringing. I was on my knees. My hands found Mal's body, the damp crumple of his blood-soaked shirt. I threw up my hands, calling the light. Nothing happened. I tried again, reaching for the power and finding only absence. I heard a shriek from above. The Volcra were circling. I could see bursts of inferni flame, the dim shapes of soldiers fighting in the violet glow of the skiffs. Somewhere, Tolia and Tamar were calling my name. Mal. My throat was raw. I didn't know my own voice. I sought the light, as I had once done deep in the belly of the White Cathedral, searching for any faint tendril. But this was different. I could feel the wound inside me, the gap where something whole and right had been. I wasn't broken. I was empty. My fists bunched in Mal's shirt.
Help me!
I gasped. What is infinite? The universe and the greed of men. What lesson was this? What sick joke? When the Darkling had toyed with the power at the heart of creation, the fold had been his reward, a place where his power was meaningless, an abomination that would keep him and his country in servitude for hundreds of years. Was this my punishment, then? Was Muratsova truly mad? Or was he just a failure?
Someone help!
I screamed. Tolia and Tamar were racing toward me, Zoya trailing behind, their bodies lit by glass canisters of Lumia. Tolia was limping. Zoya had a burn along one side of her face. Tamar was practically covered in blood from the wounds the Nichevoya had given her. They all stopped short when they saw Mal.
Bring him back,
I cried. Tolia and Tamar went to their knees beside him, but I saw the look they exchanged. Lena, said Tamar.
Please, I sobbed. Bring him back to me.
Tamar opened Mal's mouth, attempting to force air into his lungs. Tolia placed one hand on Mal's chest, applying pressure to the wound and trying to restore the beat of his heart.
We need more light, he said.
A choked laugh escaped me. I held up my hands, pleading with the light and with any saint who had ever lived. It was no good. The gesture felt false. It was a pantomime. There was nothing there.
I don't understand,
I cried as I pressed my wet cheek to Mal's. His skin was already cooling. Bagra had warned me. You may not be able to survive the sacrifice that Merzost requires. But what was the point of this sacrifice? Had we lived only to be a lesson in the price of greed? Was that the truth of Moritzova's madness? Some kind of cruel equation that took all our love and loss and added them up to nothing? It was too much. The hate and pain and grief overwhelmed me. If I'd had my power back for even a second, I would have burned the world to a cinder. Then I saw it. A light in the distance. A gleaming blade that pierced the dark. Before I could make sense of it, another appeared. A bright point that became two broad beams, sweeping high and wild above me. A torrent of light burst from the darkness just a few feet from me. As my eyes adjusted, I saw Vladim, his mouth open in shock and confusion, as light poured from his palms. I turned my head and saw them sparking to life, one by one across the fold, like stars appearing in a twilight sky.
Soldat Sol and Oprichniki, their weapons forgotten, their faces baffled, awed, terrified, and bathed in light. The Darkling's words came back to me, spoken on a ship that sailed the icy waters of the Bone Road. Morozova was a strange man.